From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for March 5th, 2021. The NBA All-Star Game is this weekend. We all know Giannis is an All-Star, and he will be there. Let's get started with a leftover from the Capitol invasion. A man talking to his ex-wife on his cell phone while he was storming the Capitol called her a moron. So, guess who turned him into the feds? The village of Swansea, Illinois, wants you to stop at the cop shop and pick up your darn chicken. They posted the following notice on their Facebook page. Missing chicken found on North Illinois Road. It's loud. It's belligerent. It's non-cooperative. It's foul-smelling, and it won't leave. If this is your chicken, come and get him before supper time. A 30-year-old man in the UK was given a COVID vaccine because they incorrectly listed his height at 6.2 centimeters. For those of us that are metrically challenged, that's 2.5 inches. Because of his height or lack of it, his body mass index was 28,000, and that would make him way beyond morbidly obese. But thanks to the typo, he got to skip the line and get vaccinated. So as it turns out, he wasn't obese after all. He was just short. And finally, we have a couple of headlines from the past week. Two Australians got lost at sea while drinking beers on inflatable air mattresses. Well, of course they did. And man sues Kentucky hospital for $1.2 million after doctors perform a C-section on him by mistake. A mistake, you think? Okay, on the podcast today, we have Dave Sandstrom, Paige Radke, Joel Dreesing. And wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Max, I wonder if that last one had anything to do with the metric to imperial conversion.
Imperial? Now you're talking over my head now.
Sorry, U.S., inches. interesting week overall for the markets. Some challenging data coming out, maybe in the sense that good news all of a sudden means bad news again, which is something that I think, you know, we've gone through in the past here. As dependent as we've been upon the Fed, it has seemed to mean that when news comes out that might suggest that the Fed could maybe finally be a little less accommodative, markets are maybe a little less willing then to reward the stock side of things. But we recovered nicely Friday afternoon after trading pretty meaningfully negative at points in time earlier in the day Friday. The Dow actually finished the day up 574 points. More than a 2.5% swing from the bottom today to the top. And for the week, the Dow actually finished up 1.8%, closing today at the bell, 31,498. The S&P 500 closed today at 38,42, up 0.8% for the week. The NASDAQ, reflecting some of the challenges that growth stocks might face with rising interest rates, a few other issues going on there as well. The NASDAQ closed today at 12,920, down 2.1% for the week. For the year, the NASDAQ now up just 0.4%. The S&P 500 pretty significantly overtaken the NASDAQ, up 2.6%. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 3.3% for the year. Joel, as we jump off here, I manage some of the challenges of good news being bad news for the markets. And we got some of that with some labor reports this week, signs perhaps that maybe a little bit of softening is taking place in some of the pandemic shutdowns, in particular on the service sector side.
Yeah, Kyle, there were great numbers today from the Labor Department on their monthly jobs report. Unexpectedly robust. And I think sometimes it's that the expectations are wrong. but it was good stuff. It was 379,000 jobs that were added in February. Now, just to put that in context, maybe some of that is just more of a bounce back from softer than expected December and January, but still, you know, we're up 9.9 million jobs from where we were back last April. We're still 9.5 million down from where we were a year ago before the pandemic, but that, you know, that's covering some ground. The unemployment rate went down to 6.2%, and that's down from 14.8% in April. But again, a year ago it was 3.5%. So, you know, we're recovering. We haven't recovered. But there are a lot of good numbers in there. Most of the jobs that were added last month were in leisure and hospitality, which is one of the areas that's been most affected by the pandemic. You know, of those, we said 379,000, you know, net increase in jobs, 355,000 jobs were in leisure and hospitality. So yeah, with people feeling better about the pandemic, because of vaccinations, or, you know, the case rates going down, more restaurants opening, more theaters opening, people are out and about more. And so, you know, they've been hiring to accommodate for that. I don't know how deeply you want to dig here, but I mean, the when you get beyond the surface, there are more concerning numbers. The unemployment, you know, is occurring more with permanent losses rather than temporary layoffs. The people who are unemployed have been out of a job for longer periods of time. So that gets more concerning. And those are the sorts of things that Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, and that the chair, the Federal Reserve Chairman, Jerome Powell, that they're expressing concern about is sort of those deeper numbers on unemployment.
And Joel, we've talked for so long about how employment is kind of the critical piece to economic recovery. And I think that long-term unemployment really is the problem that we'll have to solve if we want to get back to growth rates for the economy that, you know, predated the pandemic. And the other piece of that, I think, is that, you know, as you look at that unemployment number, it doesn't count those people who have left the labor force for whatever reason, because they no longer feel compelled to look for a job for a while, because perhaps they don't feel like they can do it safely, or perhaps they don't feel like there's one out there for them right now. And so I think that hides some of the challenges that remain in the labor market, some of the challenges that remain in the employment picture. And I want to, you know, maybe stress that, you know, as we roll ahead these next couple of months, and Biden has essentially said there'll be enough vaccines for every eligible American by the end of May, I think, you know, we can start to address that problem then as we start to get, you know, towards the tail end of vaccination instead of still where we are at kind of the early stages.
Yeah, Kyle, we have 4.2 million people fewer in the labor force now than we had a year ago. That's 4.2 million. So, you know, that's considerable. And a lot of those people are saying that they're even being hampered to look for a job because of COVID. You know, a lot of it are women who, you know, take up a lot of the childcare responsibilities in households. And, you know, it just gets complicated if kids aren't going to be in school, if daycare is not available, then, you know, that makes it harder for them to go back to work. So yeah, as we roll along and get more people back to work in all these various sectors, it's going to help everybody.
I think it's important to take a look too, Joel, at the how this really points to how unusual this pandemic is and how difficult it is to make any predictions and things when you look at it. If you look back, like you had pointed out almost a year ago, unemployment got close to 15% in the country. And here we are a year later and we're down to 6%. If you look back to the last recession at the height of the Great Recession, we topped the scales about 10% unemployment, and it took 4.5 years to get to 6%. So, you know, it's remarkable that we came this far this fast. So it and to your point now, to try to figure out what's going to tip it now to get us another couple percent to kind of get us back to that, like Kyle pointed out, that growth stage, that's really going to be tough to say.
And if we saw a lot of growth, you know, after April, you know, last spring when people were feeling better about, I mean, the pandemic wasn't as ensconced as it got afterward. And you know, there was the economic stimulus that we had that first round from Congress. There was also a lot of pent-up demand. So, you know, there's hope that with perhaps more stimulus coming from Congress, that with the vaccinations and that still pent-up demand, that, you know, we're gonna bounce back again. You know, there was talk at first of a V-shaped curve, that, you know, the employment went down and then it would just bounce right back up again. And I'm including in the show notes for this show at Landis.com, there's a graphic that shows, and it looked at first like it was going to be a V shape, but now it's sort of trailed off. It's like somebody was making a V and they sneezed or something, or you know, instead of bouncing a super ball, it's more like bouncing a softball or a grapefruit or something. It didn't really bounce that high on the other end, but we're now seeing, you know, green shoots, as they say, that suggest maybe we're going to be start heading back up again.
And, you know, I think we saw a spike in the 10-year Treasury yield this week as some optimism about the economy caused rates to move a bit higher. We traded above 1.6% for a short time today, you know, settling, you know, at the end of the day today, back below 1.6 at 1.55% for the 10-year Treasury. But I think, you know, as you talk about the longer term implications of higher rates, and Paige, I know this is something that you and I have looked at, and in particular, the changing dynamic that was so obvious this week between the tech heavy, the growth heavy NASDAQ, you know, down 2% this week, and something like the Dow or the S&P, which were able to post positive returns this week. We've just seen an immense shift in kind of the discrepancy between value and growth that we haven't seen for quite a while.
Yeah, well, and the funny thing about that, too, is that we're seeing this shift, and it's something that we haven't seen in quite a while. But at the core, it is a little bit predictable. So I know you and I were talking a little bit about how it's always fun to see times where the textbook, what the textbook tells you is going to happen, plays out in real life. And that's really something that we're seeing, particularly in the discrepancies between the different stock style boxes. So looking at growth versus value, obviously growth has outperformed over the long term, still over the past trailing 12 months, outperforming significantly, but we're starting to see that shift happen. And year to date, we're seeing value start to outperform growth, which is actually what you would expect at this sort of point in time within the economic cycle. We're at that point where things are turning around. We're not quite sure where things are going to go. The optimism is coming back in, but there's still some cautious behavior there as well. And in the past, that's typically when you see value outperform. You have those cyclical companies got beat up a little bit more. And so that's really playing out right now. But I think the most important part about that is it just really reinforces the need for diversification within your portfolio. Looking back over especially the past 5 years, it might have been tempting to give up on value a little bit and say, okay, I'm going to go all in on growth. But, you know, cycles are hard to predict. Hindsight is 20/20. And if you had done that, your portfolio would really be struggling right now. Whereas by keeping that balance amongst the different categories, you're going to be better off in the long term.
And maybe just to add to that, you know, I think the expectation is that value stocks continue to do well relative, but we have to remember that it isn't about, as you say, absolute value or absolute growth, that there's incredible opportunities on the growth side of the market. Maybe not pure value the way that we think of value, but there's lots of businesses that have you know, a strong path forward, which when measured by what they can accomplish, look cheap. And that, you know, maybe doesn't fit the standard definition of value, but it fits, you know, my definition of what I'd want to buy something that looks cheap relative to where it's going to be, right? That's how you should think of value. And so I think, you know, as you say, it's not about simply going to the other side because that's the direction the winds are blowing right now. It's about understanding that we've got to be a little bit more nuanced in the way we build things and still keep that diversity. You know, maybe Dave, just to touch on the other side of this, and that is the interest rate piece, you know, with stocks being a discount mechanism for our expectations for earnings, or stock prices being a discount mechanism for our expectations for earnings, as interest rates rise, we have to discount what we are willing to pay for those future earnings even more. And so the rise in interest rates causes some problems for those growth stocks. It causes some problems for stocks in general. But we're not really at a point yet on the interest rate front where that's an issue. We are, however, at a point where investors are starting to do some things in the bond market that if we see another bout of volatility, they might really regret pouring money into things like lower quality floating rate bonds, pouring money into inflation protected type investments that maybe they don't fully understand. And you know, I think clearly there's some risk there that we probably need to explore a bit.
Yeah, good point, Kyle. And you know, I think to it, you know, we do talk about the fact, and obviously the markets are reacting negatively to the recent rise in interest rates, no question about it. But one quick thing to point out is we're still at levels that are in the historically low range. I mean, even with the 10-year getting it up to 1.55 to end the week here after being in the, you know, 0.6 to 0.7 at some point last year, I mean, it's a pretty quick increase. But your point about people reaching for yield continues to be an issue. And going into some of these areas of the bond market where those risks are largely elevated could end very poorly. You got to remember, you're not getting paid enough in those areas to really cushion you against what can happen. I mean, you think about, go back to prior to the financial crisis and some of the, you know, the low rated bonds in the junk bond market were paying you 15, 16% interest. That goes a long way to protect you against some default, right? But when you're getting paid 4 or 5 or 6% in those areas and things go south, you're going to have a pretty good hit to the value of those particular securities. And so at this point in time, it's a pretty good stretch, I think, to be going into those areas of the market where rates are at. You got to stay disciplined during times like this. I know it's you know, your bond portfolio is, you know, not looking, you know, like it's setting records right now for you in the portfolio, but you have to remember the purpose, you know, and that's that security that you need. Your short-term needs have to be locked down. Those are not funds that you want to be placing in harm's way at this point.
Well, and I think that's the point, right, is that we never put the bond piece in the portfolio because we expected huge returns from it. We certainly were surprised last year by some pretty substantial returns. And so I think, if anything, some of the give back we've had this year in some of our bond funds, right, because especially longer term bonds have surrendered some of those gains, some of that give back might very well just be you know, getting the fund back to where it was supposed to be. And so I think if you view it only in terms of what's happened in the last 2 months, right, if you high watermark your portfolio, especially your bonds, to where they were at the end of the year, you might be doing a disservice to what those bonds actually should have been worth. And so, you know, I think if you give a longer term view to it, those funds all still meaningfully positive on a, you know, rolling 1 year basis. And then I think, you know, from a practical perspective, it was incredibly challenging to forecast strong returns for bonds when rates were as low as they were. And as rates do come up, that just adds to what bond investors can get from the bond piece of their portfolio. And so, you know, I'm encouraged by the fact that I can get 1.5 on a 10-year treasury now instead of, you know, as you mentioned, 0.6 or 0.7% at points in time last year. That's all, you know, return that goes straight to the bottom line. Yes, you do have to factor in what the impact of inflation is, but remember that you don't hold the bond piece of your portfolio to combat that. That's what everything else in your portfolio is for, is to overcome the impact of inflation so that you can get that 4% distribution every year, knowing that, you know, it can grow over time because you've got, you know, the courage from bonds to take a little bit of risk with stock and grow a little bit better.
The other piece to remember with the bond portfolio is that in investing in mutual funds with bonds gives you the opportunity to be constantly re-upping on new bonds as some of them in the portfolio reach their maturity. So for trading a little bit of short-term pain here, as these funds mature and they roll over, good managers are going to take advantage of areas where they're going to be able to lock in some more of these higher paying bonds. And over time here, you're going to get paid more. So there's some silver lining to that. And we found that that intermediate space has been very successful in capturing enough yield to protect you from the hit to your NAV over time. And I think that's one thing to remember. You're not locked into the same maturity date on every single bond in your portfolio. They're rolling over on a regular basis. And so your yields will increase on those funds as interest rates do go up.
Yeah, Dave, you took the words right out of my mouth there. That is exactly the point that I was going to make. Just, you know, remembering that rising yields might be a negative impact on the bond prices. But when you're investing in these diversified mutual bond funds, you have to remember that rising yields also means higher income payments over the long term. And so looking at this, you know, 2 month, 2.5 month time span, you might get a little bit worried about your bond portfolio, but you really have to remember that the long term implications won't actually be as bad as when you're looking at that short-term time frame.
And I think some of the disservice we do is in even just reporting on year-to-date basis this early in the year, right? Because it hides so much of what was happening at the end of last year. It's not like January 1, you know, all the trends that were going on last year suddenly disappear and we start anew. And so, you know, it's why often I like to look at those longer term time periods and really understand, A, from a backwards looking perspective, how did we get here? And then, you know, Dave and Paige, you both rightfully point out, as we look ahead, what's the benefit of these higher rates? Joel, we had other economic data this week that was good to look at.
Yes, we did, Kyle. In fact, a lot of good manufacturing numbers. We're still seeing the manufacturing sector performing pretty well through the pandemic. You know, they were shut down with everybody else last spring, but manufacturers figured out how to reconfigure their operations, and the demand again is still there. So they're still getting products out the door. We had numbers from the Institute for Supply Management, from the Commerce Department looking at factory orders. Factory orders are up for 9 months in a row. The pace is accelerating. The ISM numbers were the best in 3 years. So that's all doing well. Although we're also seeing effects yet of COVID, because the ISM, you know, they interview, do surveys with supply chain managers, and they're saying that they're beginning to have hiccups as far as getting the supplies that they need for materials, for getting the shipping done, even getting some of the right people that they need working their plants. But hopefully those all iron out, they smooth through as the pandemic gets handled.
Well, thank you all for joining me this week. Thank you for listening. We enjoy doing the program, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.